This podcast is intended for investment professionals.
Welcome back to LGIM Talks, our podcast for investment professionals. Meeting fund managers, often to have them pitch shiny new products or talk lackluster performance, take up so much of fund researchers' time. So this week we're asking, how can these meetings work best? Is there such thing as a perfect fund manager meeting? Joining us today to answer this question is James Calder, Research Director at City Asset Management. James, thank you so much for joining us here today.
Well, hello, and thank you for having me.
No, it's a pleasure. And also in the studio is returning guest Matthew Kemp from LGIM's distribution team. Hi, Matt.
Hi, Mark. How are you, right?
Very well, thank you. Still any luck on the West Ham fanzine?
Unfortunately not, no.
So, James, you've decided to invite a fund manager in to present to meet the solution that you're looking for. How can you make sure that you're getting the information you need as a researcher?
It's a very good question. It's a question that we ask ourselves on a continuing basis. All meetings tend to be different, but pretty much the same in the sense that they tend to be an hour. It's an hour and a half. A lot of it come down to the fund manager's willingness to get their story across to us. And certainly 20-odd years ago when I started doing this, you know, fund manager interviews were a little bit more challenging because you get like, well, why is this person in the office? Why are they asking me these questions? Whereas now, you know, most companies will put their manager through some sort of presentational training, some more successful than others. But the way I kind of tend to look at it is that a manager who's badly presenting, it doesn't make him a bad fund manager as such. So you've got to cut through that. But what tends to happen is that they'll turn up with the deck, which is anywhere between like, you know, 10 and 150 pages. And it's going to be quite off-putting. I think it's off-putting for the manager as well, bearing in mind that he or she's probably been through the thing a dozen or so times already that month. So we tend to be a little bit more journalistic in the sense that we'll say, okay, you know, happy for you to refer to the presentation, but let's not be led through it. I'll explain exactly what we want to get out of the meeting. And that basically boils down to the manager being comfortable when they leave our office that we have a good understanding of what they're trying to achieve on behalf of their unit holders. And then it comes down to verbal questioning. What's the mandate? What are you trying to achieve? How do you do it? Are you any different from anybody else? You know, where is your edge as such? And within that, you know, there's one question leads to another, and so on. Mm. But I tend to find that, you know, managers that are passionate about what they do, they can usually get their story across quite easily.
And Matt, of course, you're often sitting in on these meetings, but kind of from the other side, alongside that fund manager. I mean, I hope you're listening very carefully to what James is saying. I'm sure you're taking notes of exactly what it is that that research directors really want to hear from fund managers. What has been from your experience?
Yeah, I mean, there's a danger there. I mean, we all go in armed with a PowerPoint presentation, and I've taken on board James's comments there. I think you need it for visual. We need to make sure we're explaining the philosophy and the process. I think ultimately as well, behavioural finance comes into this as well. I'm well aware that James is looking at how the fund manager reacts and answers the questions and also seeing how they would respond to failure, because we all talk about our winners. We don't talk about our losers. And sort of going forward, I agree with James as well that some of the best fund managers aren't actually the best presenters. And we all say that's not an issue, but ultimately you've got to come across very well and deliver that presentation that you know what you're doing and explain how you do it.
And I think that comes back to that kind of, is the fund manager passionate about what he or she is doing? And I think that can obviously come through both through a poor presenting style and through a good presenting style. It will be very clear, do they really believe in the product, their process, and the outcomes that they can deliver for their clients? Now, James, you mentioned earlier investing across asset classes. And Matt, you just mentioned about how you need that presentation to at least cover the technicals. But how do you avoid the meeting getting so bogged down in technicals? I'm sure various factor style investment managers could talk for hours about value, growth, momentum, but is that really what you want to be hearing about?
Again, it depends on the asset class. So, for example, plain vanilla UK equity long-only fund manager, probably a little bit more easy to interview than, say, a startup manager or something that's quant orientated. But at the end of the day, you know, there's something that we go in with a degree of expectation as to what the managers are going to tell us. The thing I tend to find is that I don't let managers start talking about stocks straight on in the meeting, because you end up in just a massive stock discussion. And to be fair, that's not my job. I'm not here to pick stocks. I'm here to pick the strategy, and particularly the manager. How they go about doing it is important. But, you know, on a day-to-day basis, that's their particular job. Matt touched on something that was quite important. about talking about failures. I mean, as an industry or for a successful manager, getting it right 55% of the time puts you pretty much high up there. I mean, you wouldn't go to a, you know, brain surgeon if you only got it right 55% of the time. So it kind of puts things into perspective that, you know, you really have to be talking about, you know, things that work there and things that don't. And I sometimes find that the things that don't, you know, can describe the process as well as the things that do work well. So kind of summing it up, you know, we've got to be comfortable when we leave the room that we've got a full understanding of how it's going to perform in certain environments. And given our real return approach, I tend to find that we let the upside take care of itself. It's really about the downside. You know, when is this manager not going to perform well? You know, with the wheels fall off in the market, is he or she going to be outperforming in that environment? Mm. So it's really just getting that sort of comfort factor that we've got a good understanding of what's going on.
And looking at styles, it's very, very difficult because you always get boxed off. You know, are you a GARP manager, growth at reasonable price? Are you a value investor? And there is a tool that a lot of clients can use now where they can put the portfolio through. You can say you're a value investor and actually it turns out that you're a growth investor. So we have to be very, very conscious of that as well.
Exactly. You have so many tools to analyze a fund independently that really you can very much kind of put, is this fund manager not only presenting it in a way or talking about their process in a certain way, but do the fundamentals actually line up with that strategy?
Yeah, very much. I mean, it's one of those things where that, you know, you can do the work prior to the meeting. We've got questions that we want to ask. Matt's pointed out there are systems out there, and we probably buy the ones he's probably talking about, and they are helpful, but they're only just a guide. You know, you've got to take your view from that particular meeting. And, you know, one thing I've noticed over the last 20 odd years, I probably made up my mind in the first 20 minutes. You know, the rest of the meeting just either confirms it. It's very rarely that, you know, victory snatched from the jaws of defeat as such. So, you know, there's a lot of things there, but, you know, we do place a lot of emphasis on the fact that it is qualitative. The quants part of it is important, but it sounds a little bit kind of counterintuitive. We don't always buy the best performing fund because it may not be appropriate for the asset class that we're looking for and the exposure our clients need within their portfolios.
I think that's such an interesting way of kind of, you're not just looking for the big hitters, it's kind of looking for what is most suitable for those outcomes that you're looking to deliver.
Yes, very much so. And, you know, so, you know, some asset classes, it's easier to identify them than others. Alts, the issue we have is that there's a limited amount of data available. We tend to be a little bit more reactive on that one with regards to ideas coming across our desk. With regards to a lot of the close-ended things that we do, you know, we're very active in the IPO market, you know, for new ideas coming across. And certainly that particular structure of fund has seen a massive renaissance since since the financial crisis, in the sense that zero interest rate policies brought in asset classes that are hard assets, usually index linked and kind of yielding above 5%. So you can imagine that's kind of like, you know, a massive green light for us to go and have a look at.
I'm sure it is. Now, to bring that just back to that kind of that hour and a half meeting, to not to be too reductive, but is there kind of a killer question that you can ask of these fund managers that really kind of gets to the heart of what it is? And I'm completely understanding, as you said at the beginning, every meeting is different, so there might not be one.
I think you touched on there that I get asked this occasionally, like, you know, what's the killer question? I mean, so journalists used to ask this question quite a lot, and my response always was that there isn't one. We also used to get asked quite a bit, like, you know, for a while, and it's stopped now, thankfully, you know, what's their favourite books and so on and stuff like that. And it's like, well, I don't really care.
Really tell you much about their process?
Not really. I mean, the thing that I think that what we tend to do is, and I think that when you're interviewing a fund manager, it should really be a two-way street. But I'm always quite surprised at the end of our meetings when I always invite the manager to ask us questions if he or she has them. And quite a lot of times I'm taken aback by that because, you know, we hopefully do a decent introduction as to why we're there, who we are and so on. But allowing them to ask questions of us, I think, allows a little bit of feedback, you know, so they can take something from the meeting. And that can occasionally throw them, not in a bad way and so on, but it kind of just allows them to sort of get something back from the meeting as such. And I'd say that's probably not our killer question, but it's the one I'd probably like asking the most.
This killer question, kind of any questions for the client, the pitchee, does this throw you?
When James does say that question, have you got any questions for us? I sort of try and sort of hide away, because obviously I would have done my job by telling the client all about Citi and what they do and James's role, et cetera, et cetera. But I think the best question I would ask if I was on the buy side would be, are you invested in the fund yourself? Because it shows that you are invested in your process philosophy and you believe in what you're doing.
That's so interesting, because that brings that back to not only are you sure, but are you passionate? Do you really believe in this strategy and the process that you're bringing to it?
Indeed.
And so, gentlemen, to wrap up this conversation, I'd like to talk about a theme which is of real importance for advisors and wealth managers, is how can the industry continue to recruit bright, talented people and train them up? And I know this is an area where Citi is doing some really interesting work, James. So could you tell us a little bit about it?
Of course. I assume you're referring to our intern program. Mm. So when I joined Citi 10 years ago, I inherited a program that was set up a couple of years before, which... is run by Bath University. The students are in the economics, social science, maths faculty, and they do a four-year degree course. Mm. But one of the 4 years is an industrial placement. And I have to say that I was a bit reticent taking on kind of, they weren't even graduates, they were kind of students into the office. And I think it's been very, very successful for us. Emmy, our kind of graduate intern this year, I had to... You could go and look her up. She's the 19th one we've had. Wow. And of the 19, I think at least 6 or 7 have come back as graduates and, you know, either stayed with us. In fact,
it's a strong retention rate.
Yeah, it's good. I mean, it's, my number one analyst, Akib, he was my intern probably 3 or 4 years ago. Mm. So I've had a couple that have come back. Those that don't come back go off and do other things in the city as such. But we find that it gives them an opportunity to learn about an industry that they're hopefully interested in. I sometimes say it's almost like a year-long job interview mm-hmm. for them. When I'm hiring for graduates, one of the challenges I find is that whilst they'll be very, very bright on paper and so on, and they're very, very nice people, there's a lack of sort of substance in terms of the interview process. Say, like, you know, so what have you done for the last 4 or 5, well, I've been at university. So with our guys, when they go out and if they interview somewhere else, they can talk about, you know, the fact that, you know, they were covering a sector for a period, they contributed to asset allocation meetings, portfolio construction, interviewed fund managers, they would do client reporting, performance reporting and so on. So giving them a good grounding within financial services. I think it also allows them to make sort of rudimentary mistakes, mm-hmm. you know, whether it be kind of cultural or having to deal with the people in a workplace environment or even how a computer works, but hopefully these days that shouldn't be too much of an issue and so on. So I found it to be a very, very successful thing that that we've done in the past and, you know, can continue to do that. I guess the other bit that I think I find is that, you know, we've had guys that have enjoyed their time with us, but have gone on and done other things. So obviously it gives them that opportunity to think about it. It's not for me, but to do something else.
But they've been able to experience what it is to be in a place of work such as investment management.
Yes, and you know, our culture is slightly different in the terms of our demographics. We've got staff members that are in their 70s all the way down to like late teens. So you've got every sort of age and gender diversity within that and so on. So it gives them opportunity to actually speak to somebody's potentially grandparents' age.
Well, I think that's a really positive note to wrap up. Thank you so much for joining us today, gentlemen. I feel like what I've taken away from the conversation is that really it's about making sure that you're getting from the fund manager exactly what it is that fits in with your own process. What is it that you're delivering for clients?
That's correct.
Yes.
Perfect. Well, thank you again, both of you, for joining us today. James, if people would like to learn more about Citi Asset Management, where can they find it?
The best place to find out about what we do in terms of real return investing would be our website, which is www.citi-asset.co.uk.
Fantastic. Thank you again for listening, and see you again next week for more Elgin Talks. If you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, you can leave us a rating or maybe even a review if you're feeling particularly generous on the Apple Podcasts app. It really helps new listeners to find us, and we're always on the lookouts for new ways we can improve. As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. This podcast should not be taken as an invitation to deal in legal and general investments. Any views expressed during this recording belong to the individuals and are based on market conditions at the time of recording and do not reflect the views of Legal & General Investment Management. Legal & General Investment Management is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. And remember to share this podcast with your investment professional friends, colleagues, or even family members. And to find more great content from Legal & General Investment Management, check us out on Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website.